This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, good Wednesday morning, everybody. I am Glenda Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona. And you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for October 22nd, episode 1025. Good morning, horsey friends.
Morning. Today is Wednesday.
Hey, everyone. Happy hump day.
Happy hump day, baby. Here's to another week. Halfway done. Downhill stretch has finally begun.
Daddy, I want another pony.
What do they call Wednesday hump day anyhow? Innocuous jibber jabber.
Well, good morning. I did hear some sniffling and some sneezing through the microphone, Glenn. Are you okay?
I am fine. You gave Jennifer your cold, though.
Man.
She's got it.
It's amazing how I can pass that through a microphone down through the internet channels, and it goes all the way to Florida. That's really crazy. But sorry,
do you think
Jennifer.
Do you think a lot of the listeners are now getting colds too because of you?
Oh my gosh, you guys! I'm sorry if you do. It's all my fault. It has nothing to do with Jennifer sticking her hands in a pile of Legos at Disney World trying to make Lego people, which, by the way, I have to bring up right now because our one of our favorite listeners, Celeste, has pointed out the fact that if you look at the picture of the Lego people, first of all, I wanted to complain that, Glenn, you're carrying a briefcase, Jennifer, you're carrying a hammer, and I'm carrying a glass of beer. So that's one thing. The second thing is, if you look at yourself, Glenn, you're wearing the top half of a woman. She gave you like breasts and a necklace, and your waist is trim, and so basically you're wearing the top half as a woman. Did you realize that?
It's kind of odd with the beard and all.
Yeah.
You know what I didn't notice, because I hadn't looked at blown the picture up and looked at the larger picture, is the press pass. I actually have a press pass on. I don't know where you found a press pass, Jennifer.
Doug Geek, I thought that was more a blingy necklace, but it's Lego people. Anyway, so that's
it
how
does
she got
look, it is a, definitely a girl top. I didn't notice that until she brought it up.
I think it's hilarious. So, Lego people unite. Sorry about your cold, Jennifer. You can't blame it on me. You can blame it on a germ-infested Disney World that you were hanging out at and sticking your hands in Legos. It's not my fault. And thank you very much. So, Jennifer, what is on today's show?
On today's Wacky Wednesday edition, horse health page.
Nothing. I say all that about you, and you can't. You got nothing.
She's too tired to fight.
All right, go ahead.
I'm in a cold medicine-induced fog. Thank you very much.
Okay.
That's it,
all right,
I'm done.
Carry on. What's on the show? Well, okay, Glenn, what's on today's show?
Okay, on today's show, we have Daily Winnies, and then we have a guest that's talking about inflammation. And then we're going to talk to Victoria Spicer. She's back! It's been several weeks since she's been on the show. She was over here vacationing, but she's back today. We can talk to her about how she liked her vacation in the United States. And then I'm going to talk about some cool manure spreaders. And then we have Joseph from Equity Manufacturing on. We're not having him on today. There's no celebrity trivia today. It'll be back. We're just it's taking a day off because the person that writes the questions was a little late out of bed this morning. But
from the Legos.
Joseph, yes, we you know how sometimes we like to find out the listeners, especially, you know, what they do in real life away from horses, because some of them have some fascinating things they do. Well, Joseph, who's from Equity, has a fascinating thing he does when he's away from the business and his horses. So we're going to talk to him about that. So that's what's coming up. Did I get it right, Jennifer? Was I close? Okay,
yeah,
she has now left the show.
Left the building. I'm sorry, right. Here.
Okay, Jennifer, I'm putting Jennifer on mute now, and she can just hack and cough to her heart's delight over there. I'm glad we're not in the same studio. Let's just put it that way. All right, Daily Winnie time. And it's right there. My Daily Winnie goes out to Holly Bennett Awad, who is an eventer who we talked about the other day when Leslie was on. She rides a horse called Gin and Juice and had ridden it for 10 years when the owners decided that they wanted somebody else to ride the horse. I didn't realize that she had been working at the owner's facility as well for the last 10 years. I didn't know that. And she has announced now that she has found a new facility to work out of. So apparently this wasn't just the horse, it's the whole thing. She's out. I think what you said on Monday is probably correct. But she's going to be, and I didn't know if you knew this place, it's called Sweet Oaks Ranch, and she said it's everything she could want in a facility, and she said it's right across from Galway Downs. And I know you've been to Galway Downs, the event out there, so I didn't know if you knew this Sweet Oaks Ranch.
You know, Galway Downs is in a location in Temecula, California, that is to be envied by every horse person in the entire world. But, oh, my, well, it's... you're in California, you're in Southern California, and it's this valley of just incredible, beautiful, sandy, rolling hills and the mountains up the side. It's absolutely gorgeous. So the fact that Holly's in that area, she is incredibly lucky. I mean, but there's so many little horse farms and big horse farms that are surrounding because it's just this valley of horses. There's race horses, there's dressage horses. I just got an email from somebody from a Hunter Jumper Barn next to Galway Downs. So I don't know which one it is, but it's got to be freaking nice because everything around there is ridiculous. Now, I also, because I usually compete at Galway Downs, and I follow Holly on Facebook. She just sent a mass invitation to a farm warming party the night before Galway starts, the horse trial. So that's where they have their international horse trial, the 1, 2, and 3 stars. She's like invited everybody. She's like, we'll have drinks, we'll have food, come on out to the farm warming party. So this girl is celebrating the fact that she's not at that other barn anymore. I have got to know. I am going to make it my personal mission to find out what happened because, you know, it should be like we should have some sort of new, you know how they have People magazine with all the celebrity gossip stories? There should be
like ETV. We should have our own. Yeah.
We should have our own equestrian version of gossip because I need to know what's going on. I mean, I don't need to, but I'd really like to know what happened.
Well, you know, Eventing Nation gets close to that, but you're right. That's Who could do it better than us? Who could do the true e-radio better than we could?
Be like, and the Hollywood Report, it'd be like, the Equestrian Report is, and it would come on and it would be me going, OMG. Did you know that Holly Bennett was asked to leave from her other barn because she's not going to be riding Gin and Juice anymore? So obviously, some blowout happened, and I'm going to get the 411 for you. Okay. I mean, I could totally do that.
Yes, you could. You could. You'd be perfect for that, actually. We'll have to work on that. Gin and Juice, too, they announced is going to be taking a break from competition until the spring, and they're going to be getting some foals via embryo transfer. So
yeah.
She's going to be doing some basically baby making in the meantime until spring. I'm sure that they're going to take advantage of her reputation at this point. Well, that's it for – so my Daily Winnie was congratulations to Holly Bennett for finding a new spot.
Well, you guys know, as well as I do, that there are a billion different ways to waste your time on the Internet. Am I right? I'm right.
Yes.
So
yes.
I just posted it on our Horses in the Morning Facebook page. It is which – and Glenn, you'll love it, and you should take the quiz. Which Disney horse are you? And this is from playbuzz.com. And you can find out what Disney horse you are, and it is awesome. So go on and take the quiz, and then leave in the comments what Disney horse you are. I am Maximus from Tangled, apparently. The questions really have nothing to do with horses or anything like that. It's more like pick a color. It's a silly quiz from Playbuzz, and it's really fun. And so that gets my Daily Winnie because I am Maximus, the beautiful white horse from Tangled.
Wow. You got a good-looking horse. I will take the quiz during the show and let you know what I am.
Okay, yeah. Everybody put your who you are in the comments because I'm curious to see how many different ones there are.
Yeah, I don't know. All right, I'll give it a try. Well, okay. We have time for a news story or two, and I'll tell you what, one of the news stories I came up with, there were some really bizarre news stories actually in the news today, but one of them, all of you Downton Abbey fans, by the way, have you started it and gotten caught up yet?
Glenn, I got to be honest with you. You keep talking about Downton Abbey, and I really think that I would really like it, but I have fallen asleep in the first episode 3 times. I can't make it through. I can't do it. And I love Jane Austen, and I love Pride and Prejudice and Sense and Sensibility, and I can't do it. It's so boring. Why is it so boring? It's PBS. Can PBS not do anything exciting? Seriously? Does it get better?
I don't know why you're saying this. 90%. It's just like your taste in comedy. It is just like your taste in comedy. It sucks because, you know, 90% of the audience, by the way, is disagreeing with you on this one, too, you know, right now, because we have a lot of Downton Abbey fans.
My dad sent it to me, and he's like, this is so good. You're going to love it. And I said to him, I said, Dad, I can't stay awake. He goes, I couldn't stay awake through it either. I slept through the whole thing. But Karen liked it, his wife. So I'm like, well, why did you give it to me? We've tried. Chad,
oh, I love it. I can't wait till next season to start in January. Can't wait.
You mentioned comedy. You like a guy that sticks his hands up the butt of puppets and pretends to be them. He's not
funny.
And
that's hilarious, too. That 90% of the audience loves him, too. You're in the minority here, Jamie. Sorry, you're not going
to
win this one.
Question of the day. We got to do it again. I need to revisit this. Who likes the puppet guy? Jennifer, can you post that online, please? Be fair and be honest, and don't put, like, oh, who thinks that Jamie's stupid and doesn't like this? You know, do it in a very fair way, Jennifer. Post a little picture of whatever you like to do, and let's see. Let's get in on it, because I know I lost the Big Bang Theory thing, but I need to know about the puppets.
You didn't
just
lose the Big Bang Theory thing. You got crushed.
I did. That was bad.
That wasn't even close.
That was bad.
And I don't think you won the Downton. You're going to win the Downton Abbey thing either, by the way.
But, I don't care about the Downton Abbey thing. I need to know about the puppet because that is awful. That is the worst thing I've ever seen on television.
Jeff Dunham, funniest man on television. All right, so Breeders' Cup. There is a story out of that that actually applies to Downton Abbey that applies to the Breeders' Cup also.
Really?
A horse named Telescope is the 92 favorite of odds makers to win the $3 million Breeders' Cup Turf next month. And basically, the connection is that horse is owned by Highclere Thoroughbred Racing. Highclere is the castle that Downton Abbey is set in. It's Highclere Castle. So
cool.
They have a racing foundation, and the Duke and Duchess, I think, Earl, I don't remember who it is. It's a Duke and Duchess and Earl. One of those titled and gentry people in England actually runs the thing now, the castle, trying to keep it alive. Most of these people, I've been watching some interesting stories, most of these people that run these castles that have been around for hundreds of years are just doing anything they can to make enough money to keep them from falling apart because they're so expensive to run these properties. And these people have a bunch of businesses, and one of them is Highclere Thoroughbred Racing, and one of their horses is going to be coming over. And it's partly owned by Hugh Bonneville, who is the star of Downton Abbey. So Hugh Bonneville is one of the owners in Highclere Thoroughbred Racing. So that's the tie-in to Downton Abbey. Highclere, founded in 1992, was a partnership of a bunch of different people to own racehorses. But between 1992 and 2013, it spent more than 26 million pounds on bloodstock. And its horses have won almost $6.6 million in prize money, but Highclere has earned close to $34 million from bloodstock sales during that period. So basically, they're up about 12, 13 million pounds. So they've done pretty well.
Because it sounds to me like you are, if I can break this story down, like, oh, man, we really need some money. We really need some money to keep this castle going. I know what to do. Let's get into horses. That seems logical. But, I mean, who would do that? Like, oh, we need to make some money. Let's buy some horses.
Well, apparently it's working for them.
Right?
They did it right.
You have enough, you spend it to make it.
Yep, exactly. For them, they're one of the very few people that have gotten into that business and is making money. And they just got a new investor. One of the sheikhs from Dubai just invested in Highclere Thoroughbred Racing. So they got a new influx of money, too.
Yeah.
Well, there's my story relating to Downton Abbey. I got Downton Abbey in there somehow. And apparently I got the Bang Theory and Jeff Dunham in there, too. So I'm happy.
Oh, you started the argument. Hey, so, Glenn, I am in these, like, I'm trying to eat very clean, and I'm not eating chemicals anymore, you know, whereas high fructose corn syrup and all these things. And so I follow all these food blogs, foodbabe.com, you know, all these different things to try to eat healthier. And one of the things that is constantly getting recommended is hemp seeds. Hemp, like, you know, the non-THC marijuana. Yeah, you'll eat whatever. Because if you have some hemp, Taco Bell all of a sudden becomes very logical.
Exactly.
But hemp seeds, like chia seeds, all these different things, you're supposed to put them in your smoothies. It's supposed to be very, very healthy. Well, the hemp was made illegal because of its close relation to marijuana. But now that marijuana is becoming legal in many places, hemp seeds are actually, hemp is being grown. And guess where hemp is being grown? It's starting as a pilot program for bedding, stable bedding, none other than the University of Kentucky. So we may go out and go to a horse show and you don't buy bagged shavings, you buy bagged weed. But not weed, but you
Does
know
that
the,
test? Will that test? If they're
right?
Laying on hemp all night, will that if they're breathing in that all night, will that test?
What if they're
just
eating
curious.
Their bedding? And all of a
do
sudden
they test for marijuana in horses at the horse shows?
They probably test for it at horse races, but not at horse shows, I don't think. But that'd be cool. That's great. That it's like a very easy to keep crop, and it's very easy to grow, and it takes very few chemicals. It's actually a really great crop, so I'm excited that they're starting to do it on a side note. But can you imagine opening up a bag of hemp and spreading it in your horse's stall? That's so funny.
All right, let's get serious. Maybe the doctor knows about this.
It's time for the Horses in the Morning Horse Health Report, when our intrepid hosts, together with an unlucky member of the equine veterinary trade, attempt to inform, enlighten, or terrify horse owners everywhere into funding a Kickstarter campaign to mass-produce Kevlar-coated, bubble-wrap-lined equine products.
And we welcome to the show this morning Dr. Malinowski, Karen, from the Rutgers Equine Science Center, and we're going to have a little chat about inflammation in your equine athlete. Good morning, Dr. Malinowski.
Good morning, Jamie and Glenn. How's it going?
Fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us. We were just doing a story. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yes, Jamie, I've been listening to you, and so you know how to make $1 million in the horse industry, don't you?
How is that? Well, spend five?
You need to spend $5 million to make $1 million.
That's why I haven't made my million yet, isn't it?
And so, Glenn, I'm listening to your piece on the Breeders' Crown, and that is a perfect lead into our discussion this morning about inflammation in equine athletes.
I first got to find out, though, will hemp help? If we bed with hemp, will that help with the inflammation? That's my question.
Well, it might make you feel better as the owner, but don't know what it's going to do to reduce inflammation in the horses. That science hasn't been done yet.
There's a new project for Rutgers. And I'm sure there's a lot of students that would be happy to help. You have them lined up for that test.
Absolutely.
So speaking of inflammation in the equine athletes, to kind of get kick-started, why don't you explain what inflammation is in our horses?
Great, Jamie. And good first question. Inflammation is, you know, a broad term, part, and it describes the complex biological response of the body, whether it be horse, human, dog, cat, whatever, and actually to fight an insult to the body. So that insult, folks, can be disease, you know, can be a virus, it can be an infection, but I think I'd like to focus the topic today is an injury. And so Our equine athletes, whether they be racehorses, whether they be show jumpers, eventers, pleasure riding horses, 41-year-old Lord Nelson, we do see, you know, we fall, we trip, we tear something, and so the body sends a variety of cells to the site of the injury, you know, the classic signs of inflammation that we know are pain, you know, the horse doesn't move as well, so you know something's wrong, they show a sign of lameness, you may feel heat in that area, you may see swelling, redness, and of course the lameness or the loss of function. So the body, as it tries to clean up the injury with a variety of cells, with a variety of cell signaling agents that we call cytokines, you know, small proteins that are in the circulation that get these other cells into action, they call the force to action and to send these cells to the site to try to repair the damage that's being done. And so what I wanted to share with everyone out there is, unfortunately, Dr. David Horhoff, who does study inflammation and cytokines at the University of Kentucky's Gluck Center, couldn't be with us this morning, but David is going to be here in New Jersey on Monday, November 10th at our evening of science and celebration here on the Cook campus. And he will be discussing the research that he has done looking at the inflammatory response to exercise in equine athletes. And knowing David's work pretty well, Jamie and Glenn and listeners, I can say he's also going to share with us how can we use these cell signals, this group of proteins that we call cytokines, to be used as a possible marker to predict, you know, just from a blood sample, to be able to predict, is a horse prone to injury? And so Dr. Horhoff has done a lot of work in the thoroughbred racing industry in Kentucky. He's also collaborated with us here on our standardbred research herd. And so I'm really excited to look and hear this lecture on November 10th. So a shout out to all of you who may be here in New Jersey. Please go to the Equine Science Center's website and sign up for this wonderful evening. It is sure, certainly, a lecture not to be missed.
Absolutely. So what you're saying is potentially you like this horse, you want to potentially buy it, so you sign up and you get a pre-purchase, you call your vet, they come out there and they're like, oh, let's do the blood test to see how accident-prone this horse is.
Oh, Jamie, that, you know, you're going way into the future, but that is really spot on. You know, could we in a general pre-purchase exam actually see through blood work the battery or, you know, the profile of inflammatory cytokines? And again, there are pro-inflammatory and anti-inflammatory cytokines, but could we actually see in a horse's blood sample how prone they would be to actually a musculoskeletal injury? Wow, we would be really looking into the future. But I'm sure down the road before Dr. Horhoff ends his career at the University of Kentucky, he would love to see that happen. And that'll be a good question for me to ask him that night.
Nice. See, I'm lending to that. I wish I was close to New Jersey because I would totally be excited to go and see that and to go listen to that. Because if anybody can do it, it's you and Dr. Horhoff. So the next question would be, well, to scale that back a little bit, are you thinking maybe potentially – a blood test maybe to see how much inflammation is in the horse's body currently. So you, is this horse hurt? What's the lameness? What's the problem? Instead of just throwing him in and doing a, you know, CT scan or something, to test the blood and say, you know what, it's not really inflammatory. Is that something that you're talking about, or am I kind of jumping around?
No, Jamie. Well, sure. You know, looking at the cytokine profile in a horse's blood certainly would tell you whether it was in an inflammatory state or not. The key, though, is you wouldn't know where that is. And so the traditional diagnostic tools of, you know, the lameness exam, MRIs, and that sort of thing, it wouldn't tell you it's the left pastern joint,
yeah.
You know, the left front pastern joint. I mean, because it would be, but if you're seeing, you know, signs of a little intermittent lameness in a left front leg, a little bit of swelling, you ice it, you know, the traditional ice is still a wonderful thing for treating inflammation. You know, you give the horse a little anti-inflammatory agent like phenobutazolidine, and it comes down, but then it comes back. I mean, this profile of cytokines might be able to tell you actually is the horse healing or maybe it's not healing. And so I think taken together, this type of information is extremely important to the future of veterinary science when it comes to determining inflammation and lameness in our horses. And tying together with that some new information that has not been presented yet that I will be presenting that night is a discussion, and we can get into this when we talk about older horses next month, Jamie and Glenn, is another cell or group of proteins called heat shock proteins. And it's called a heat shock protein because initially in Drosophila, well, again, I guess everybody started experiments in Drosophila, it was induced in the body by heat. And so, you know, it may not necessarily be the proper term for it now, but it does, like the cytokines, like immune cells, it responds to a stressor, like exercise, like a change in temperature, like an injury. And so Ryan Avenetti, a PhD student of Dr. McKeever and mine, just graduated here in May. And this will be the first time. He, of course, is traveling on his new job around the world, and so he won't be here on November 10th, but I am very proud to be able to give his first presentation about heat shock proteins and their role in all of this. So it's going to be neat to tie what David's going to say and then me follow up with the heat shock protein. We're starting to put together, Jamie and Glenn, a wonderful story. And guys, what's exciting about it is we're getting into the basic science. So it's not just, oh, yes, this is the state, or we have exercise, and this is what we see. You know, cortisol goes up, cortisol comes down, or whatever. We're actually drilling down now mechanistically because, guys, all of these cells talk together. So, you know, heat shock protein's role is in cell repair. It can take and signal proteins that are fragmented, that are broken, and actually repackage them and get them to refold in cellular repair. So when we talk about inflammation, cytokines, heat shock proteins have a role there too. And so, you know, some of these equine laboratories around the world are not doing, you know, you feed them something, you weigh them, and you see what happens to them. We are going mechanistically down into seeing what's happening at the cellular level. And as Dr. McKeever shared with you last time, because the horses are such a fabulous role for human medicine, this is applicable to us as well.
No, isn't that amazing, Dr. Malinowski, that the horses do become such a great way for us to learn about human medicine? I often wonder why it's not a common practice to do joint injections with Legend in humans. When, like, people have joint issues, they inject steroid into it, and steroid, and steroid, and steroid, and, like, why can't you guys put some synthetic joint fluid in it? I'm always curious about that.
Well, I think, Jamie, that I, luckily, knock on wood, I don't have those issues yet, but I certainly think there are, you know, agents of, you know, Syniverse and things, you know, for human joints as well that will mimic, you know, the actual synovial fluid that you have. So it's not just putting in anti-inflammatories. It's also, you know, trying to replenish the synovial fluid that currently might be in an arthritic knee, an ankle, an elbow, or something like that. So I think human medicine is a little more than just anti-inflammatories, but, you know, that seems to be the gold standard that you try to and again, to get some of these other agents like, you know, a Cineverse to work, you certainly need to reduce the inflammation first. And so you don't want a joint to be in a total state of inflammation before you give a product like, you know, Legend, you know, something like that to try to replenish the fluid that used to be there. Or, you know, to start regenerating new cartilage, you know, that kind of a thing. It's not going to work if... You know, because these immune cells, these inflammatory responders are going to be trying to clean up those agents. You know, they're trying to clean up the area, and if you put something new in there, they're going to clean that up too. So you want the joint to be in as anti-inflammatory state as possible when you inject some of these other products.
Right. Well, I'm excited about the future, and because you're so excited about it, and you've got me excited about it, where can people find out a little bit more? Where can they get a hold of you? Where can they learn? I know your website is ESC, which Equine Science Center, .rutgers.edu. I believe you guys have a Facebook page, right?
Yes, we do, Jamie. I'm sure Kyle's going to post this onto to our Facebook page right after we're done.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for joining us and giving us a little bit of something to look forward to. And I need to be the first to know when there's a blood test to tell me if a horse is accident prone. Okay, so you call me. You let me know, because I'm going to test all the jerk faces that I have in my backyard right now that try to kill themselves on a daily basis. We can use them as science experiments.
Jamie, I think I'm going to take that test myself first.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Dr. Malinowski. We will talk to you again next month. I'm looking forward to it.
All right. Glenn and Jamie, have a wonderful day. Thanks, Jennifer, for asking us to join the show, and we're always here. Take care.
Thank you so much. All right. Bye-bye.
All right, let's hear from Easy Signs Online, and then we're going to talk to Victoria, who we haven't talked to in what seems like months, because she's just been on this long vacation to the United States. It must be so nice to work over there in Europe and get the month off. Must be nice. This week's EasySignsOnline.com spotlight product is their New England Style Farm Signs, their most popular line of signs. New England Style Farm Signs are very durable and designed for long-term outdoor use with no maintenance required, no wood to rot, and no paint to peel. They will outlast the old style painted wood signs by many, many years. They are available in many sizes, shapes, and styles, which makes them the perfect sign for any farm or business. Go online today and go through the EasySignsOnline.com easy step-by-step ordering process to see all the prices and options available. They also offer free, no-obligation sign proofs on all New England-style signs, and you get free shipping as well on all New England-style signs. So replace your old worn-out sign and make a great first impression with a new farm sign from EasySignsOnline.com. And the holidays are right around the corner, so it's a terrific gift idea. I can't think of a better one. Visit EasySignsOnline.com.
Now it's time for the European Report with Horse and Country TV.
And we welcome Victoria Spicer to our show. Victoria, good morning.
Good morning to you both.
Well, welcome back to your country. My gosh, you just spent a month in ours.
Almost, just over 2 weeks. I'd like to spend a month. I could have done with another 2 weeks of holiday.
Yeah, fantastic that you got to. I actually... saw that you posted something on Facebook, and I responded immediately because it sounded so cool. I thought, there's nowhere but London would this happen. And you said that you were walking around and you saw a bunch of people playing Quidditch in a field. And Quidditch, of course, is the wizard game from Harry Potter. I don't know how they play because you use flying brooms, but that was not in England, right?
No, it was in Charleston, which is one of the six cities that we visited in our two-week trip, which was rather a lot. And there did seem to be a lot of students there, and I think it was students playing Quidditch. But I've seen it happen in a movie. There's a film called The Internship with Owen Wilson and Vince Vaughn, and in that film they play Quidditch. So I knew it was a thing in America, but I didn't expect to see it live.
Yeah, that would be very surprising. So give us an idea of kind of what you did and where you went and what was your favorite thing?
We went into Miami, which is just purely so I can get some sunshine and live out of school, and that was amazing. We were in a fantastic hotel. It was very luxurious. And then we went up to Jacksonville to watch NFL, which is pretty much the reason behind the entire trip, is to go and see Jacksonville play. As anyone who follows NFL will know, they're not very good. And they.
I was just going to say, does Jacksonville have any fans? You guys are the two.
I'm not even a fan of them. I'm denying this. I think Nick would like me to be a fan of them. But apparently when they were set up in the 90s, that was just when he was getting into NFL. And so they do have quite a big following over here. And people are always suggesting that they're going to get moved to become London's team, which I'm not sure if that's going to happen. But there are quite a few British Jacksonville fans. And I don't know, I thought the stadium was pretty sold out the day that I went. I nearly got heat stroke when we saw them play in Jacksonville because it was boiling. And they have a swimming pool in their stadium. How cool is that?
Really? I didn't know that.
They have two, I think it's a new thing for this year, they have two swimming pools up in the top corner of the stadium. So you can be in the swimming pool watching the game.
Mm-hmm. Only in
they
Florida.
Have that. No, they have that here in Arizona, too, at the baseball stadium. And people hit home runs into the pool. It's hilarious. And only in Florida and Arizona. I don't know why, but I guess, you know, the places where old people go, they just want to have a pool everywhere they go. That's Florida and Arizona, and they sit in there. But apparently tickets are really expensive, and I would not want to be sitting in a bikini in a pool in the stadium. It's not going to happen.
nor me, and the amount of cameras that were around either. I don't want to be recorded.
Right? Exactly.
So that was really fun. And then we drove up the coast to Savannah and then Charleston, which were beautiful and historic, and really enjoyed them. We would have quite liked some more time there. And then flew across to Nashville and Memphis, which were fun, but it was quite cold. I was a little bit disappointed because I wanted to escape the cold. And it wasn't particularly nice the few days that we were there.
Didn't you have tornadoes or something, too, the one day you were there?
There was a tornado dangerously close to Memphis, so that was quite worrying, but luckily it didn't come to anything. And the hotel we were staying in used to be a bank, so I decided if it had been there for decades, hopefully it would survive this little tornado, and luckily it didn't come too close in the end.
Now, did you get to go over and see Elvis's house? Go to Graceland?
No, we didn't, which is terrible. In Memphis, which is home of the blues, of course, we went to see rock band Pearl Jam. So we failed to see the touristy things. We're not being at that. But we did go to a lot of bars. So I feel like I have contributed something to the U.S.
Did you eat any barbecue in Memphis?
I can't even remember. We probably did. You guys have some amazing restaurants. I think when we've come back and we've been abstaining from any kind of fried food, because we did have a lot of fried stuff and a lot of meat. So I'm back on healthy rations from now on.
Well, from what I hear, the food in England isn't so delicious. So you may be missing it a little bit. But, yeah, fried food and meat is pretty much what is here as well. And some of us try to avoid that as well.
Yeah, it's not easy. And I have to say, I didn't see any horses apart from horse and carriages around some of the older cities. And I just keep doing this. I come to America and I look out in the fields, but I don't see any horses. Where are they all hiding?
You're going to Jacksonville, woman. You need to actually venture out of the city.
Yeah, I did a lot of cities and not a lot of countryside, so I guess that's where I'm going wrong.
You don't see too many horses in football stadiums either. Denver, you'll see a horse, but that's pretty much it. I mean, you're not going to see a lot of horses. So,
no, getting it wrong.
Jamie's right on it.
Apparently,
hey, speaking...
Sorry, go. There you go.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, I was taking a look at your lineup here, and you wanted to talk. I had these in my news today. I was holding off till you came in. We had two Lady Gaga stories in our news today, and you have one of them in your lineup as well. Tell us about that.
We do, yes. So she's been all over the press in the last few days for having bought a $23 million property, which has stables and a tack room and a feed room and an outdoor school and paddocks. So we can't help wondering, is she about to set up her own yard? Are we about to see her eventing next year? Or is she going to pluck some lucky rider out of obscurity and become the world's richest eventing owner or dressage owner? I'm not sure, but we were very intrigued to see this story.
And that's in that little place that she bought. It's only 10,000 square feet. It's in Malibu, and there's not too many farms left in Malibu, actually. So this is one that she could put horses on. We'll see. You know, that's not too far from where Holly Bennett's setting up, Jamie. Maybe Holly got a new owner.
Yeah, it's a little bit further than you think, and there is no comparison to up those mountains in Malibu to Temecula. It's, oh my gosh, where she is living, we drive through because my brother-in-law, he slums it around that area, but he lives in that area, and where she has moved, you should Google, like, if you were to Google Earth it, there's no equestrian estates around there because everything is on the top of these gorgeous mountains overlooking the ocean. And I had no idea there would be a horse farm around there, much less Lady freaking Gaga would buy it. Really?
Well, I guess she wanted a house with a bat cave, which maybe there's only a few houses that have them. And if you're going to have stables, you might as well have a bat cave or vice versa. So, yes.
It has an 800-bottle wine cellar. 800-bottle wine cellar is bigger than my house.
So, wait a second. You have a wine cellar in your house. Let me just, a side note here. You have a wine cellar in your house. You sell your house. You don't get to move with your wine?
Maybe it's the hassle of moving. Because as you guys know, I also work for Hickstead, which is a very famous showground here in the UK. And a few years ago, the owners of Hickstead did sell their wine collection for £1.5 million. So maybe that's why people don't move them.
She already bought it. She paid for it, I'm sure. $23 million house probably paid for it.
Probably.
Yeah. Hey, there was another story, too, about Lady Gaga that you didn't have in your lineup, but it comes out of England. And I'm sure you probably saw it. It was a court case, and it applies to everybody that's selling a horse. This lady, Louisa Donovan, deals in polo ponies, and she has a place called Pharma Polo Ponies in Oxfordshire, and she sold a pony to this family. Well, the family said the pony was unsuitable for children to ride, and they sold as suitable, and it was a nutcase and everything. So they took some videos, and they put the videos up on YouTube, and they put as a caption on the videos, Pharma Polo Ponies sold this polo pony as being suitable for children, downright dangerous, and a scandal. They get away with this. And they posted several videos like that, just blasting this lady out of the water. Well, it went to court, and this lady actually ended up buying the polo pony back. It went to court, and the seller actually won the court case for libel and defamation.
Wow.
So the people that put up the videos are going to be in trouble and going to have to pay whatever the judgment comes out to. But yeah, she actually won the court case. So before you want to totally trash somebody, keep that in mind.
I'm slightly confused, though, what that has to do with Lady Gaga. Or is that
right? Okay, I have that. Is the pony's name was Lady Gaga.
Oh, I see. I was thinking she was going to be the person trying to buy the pony, but no, that
makes sense. Lady Gaga was the pony that was in question. So there, I loosely tied it to Lady Gaga.
Yeah, that's not a Lady Gaga story, Glenn. That's not. But what you do have is a story, and I'm so excited, is that Frankel, our favorite racehorse from England, Frankel, now a Briar horse here in the United States, Frankel has a full brother. And usually, like, Barbaro's full brothers, they just haven't really quite panned out. How is Frankel's brother doing?
Well, he's raced quite a few times, and he's not in the same league as Frankel because, you know, Frankel raced 14 times and he won each time. But he's been really consistent, and he's had, you know, a number of wins and lots of top five placings. But he was due to race on last Saturday at Ascot on Champions Day, which is the most valuable single race day that we have in the UK, and we get all the top horses. And there's been a little bit of controversy this year because it's been really wet here and the ground was heavy, and of course you don't get these superstars running on anything less than good going. And there was Noble Mission, who's Frankel's full brother, and he was in the race, and he wasn't one of the favorites. He was about 5-1, but recently the trainer has changed the way she trains the horse and let him front run. And off he goes, and he led the race, and he stayed on, and another horse came up to challenge. So it was a really exciting finish, but he held on. So 2 years to the day that Frankel won his final race at Champions Day, Noble Mission did the same thing, and the same colours. And it was really emotional because Sir Henry Cecil, who trained Frankel, he died of after a long battle with cancer last summer, and his wife, Lady Cecil, carried on the training and took over with this horse, Noble Mission. And it's with her that he's really achieved this biggest win of his career. So it was a nice tribute to Sir Henry as well.
Absolutely. Very cool. And now, when I was reading the story, and sorry if you just mentioned it, but is this the same race that Frankel has won in the past?
Yeah, he raced at Champions Day every year because it only formed in 2011, and he raced there in 2011 and 2012, and that was his final race when he won the Champions Stakes. So it's particularly special that the same brothers won the same race just 2 years apart.
That's so cool. Sorry, Glenn, go ahead. Do you have something?
I was just going to say, speaking of racing, and I love this. You know, we've always said that for racing to survive, they need to expand and make it more entertainment and, you know, do something in the 20 minutes in between races to make it fun for people who are just standing around. You guys do that in Exeter. The Devon Day at Exeter is doing it again. I think they did it before. This year, they're having pony races and draft horse races. Now, that's something I could bet on.
Yeah, it's quite fun. We've got another race. A race course nearby that has a Shire horse race every year, and that's been hugely popular. But last year they had the Clydesdales, and that went down a hit with the audience. And this year they've got the Clydesdales back again, but they're also having a Dartmoor pony race, which is one of Britain's smaller native breeds, and they're really sweet little ponies. So they're going to be having their racing color, racing saddles and racing colours put on, and off they go. And we're going to find out. Can Dartmoor ponies really race? So that will be fun.
You know, yesterday I interviewed for the driving radio show some guys. There's a thing that's making a comeback here in the United States. Apparently it was popular 50 years ago and then died off, and that is chariot racing. And what they do with them, it's not like Ben-Hur where they have spikes sticking out the side, you know, and they're all just trying to kill each other. Although when you watch the videos, you would think that. They actually have chutes, and they drive a pair of quarter horses. And they have tiny little chariots that the drivers stand up in, and they actually have quarter-mile chariot races, and they have these chutes with the gates that open and everything, and then this pair of quarter horses it looks dangerous and crazy. It just looks crazy. But it's apparently becoming quite popular out in the Midwest now. So chariot racing is coming back to England soon, I'm sure.
I will look out for it. We have scurry racing, which is about as close as we get.
Well, they'll be, you know, in England, they would do it different, though. They would wear suits of armor. They would have knives and swords and lances. You know, it'd be much different, England.
Probably would.
Much more historical. And you also had a video of the week. What was that?
Yeah, we've got highlights coming up on Horse and Country from Horse of the Year show, which is one of the most famous shows in the world. We are showing some of the working country pony classes and one of the show jumping classes and also a master class. So if you go and head to our website, horseandcountry.tv/video, you can see all our latest videos there and check out the upcoming highlights trail.
Very good. And before I let you go, we're running out of time here. I just have to ask you the important question of the day, because we had this discussion earlier in the show about Highclere Castle and that little TV show that is filmed there. Do you watch Downton Abbey?
I watched the first series and really enjoyed it, but I have to say I haven't watched it since then. So, afraid not. But I still know.
You're not helping my case, Victoria. You're not helping me.
What is your case?
Victoria, let me ask you this.
And
Victoria,
Jamie said she can't get to the first episode.
How many times did you fall asleep watching that show?
Well, it's on about 7 o'clock in the evenings here when it first came out, so I managed to stay awake.
Okay.
I find it quite engaging and watchable, but I quite often do that. I did the same with Game of Thrones, watched the first series, and then it petered out. So. I'm not very good with TV series. I'm watching 24 10 years after everybody else is. Maybe in 10 years' time, I'll get back into Downton Abbey.
Wait a minute. If you're watching, I did watch 24. If you're watching 24 from 10 years ago when it first started, all the things that they did in that show have now really happened.
They pretty much have. We've just finished series 3, which had that outbreak of the disease. Obviously, there's a lot of talk about Ebola, and we started to get a bit confused between 24 and reality. So luckily that.
Thank you very much, Victoria. We appreciate you stopping by. It's good to hear your voice again.
Oh, thank you. I have to say this week I've done very little horsey stuff and a lot of American tourism, NFL, and Downton Abbey. So maybe next week I'll get back to more equestrian topics, although probably not.
All right. Thanks, Victoria.
Thank you.
Horseandcountry.tv. What Victoria doesn't know is we've done very little horsey stuff this morning either. So
between Lady Gaga stories, I mean, my gosh.
Yeah. Jennifer looked up that farm that Holly Bennett said. Did you see that? Sweet Oaks Ranch, the one that's where she's going to be operating out of. And Jennifer, it is listed on horseproperties.net for $6.8 million.
Yeah, it looks really impressive. She posted a lot of pictures online. So she's going to be very happy there. No issues there. And
exactly.
When you have a name like Holly Bennett, people are going to open doors like that for you. So she's going to be very happy.
Are you sure Lady Gaga's not involved? Are we sure? Or Bill Gates, maybe?
Maybe Bill Gates. Maybe Bill Gates is. He's buying horse properties, so, you know.
Well, let's talk about manure spreaders. You know, they made them even better. Mill Creek Manufacturing is now the first and only company to make stainless steel compact manure spreaders. Anybody that's owned a manure spreader in the past, like Jennifer and I have, know that the biggest problem you have with manure spreaders is one of two things that happen. Rust, exactly. The metal parts start to rust, the little chain thing that makes them work breaks, and the floor totally rots out, and you have to replace that stinky wooden floor. Well, that no more, because Mill Creek has solved those problems. They have made a worry-free solution to your manure management, and that is their stainless steel line of spreaders. They're guaranteed to not rust through for life. They're the only compact manure spreaders you'll find anywhere with a warranty like that. There's also a 3-year warranty on the mechanics and structure. Put this together with Mill Creek's exclusive low-maintenance sealed bearings, and you've got a machine that you can count on to perform day in and day out with no headaches for you. Even the apron chain, the little chain that makes things go around that breaks all the time, and the beaters are stainless steel. So they're not going to rust, and the beaters always rusted out too. I think by the time we sold our manure spreader, it was like 40 years old, the beaters had like nothing left. They were like little stubbles sticking out of the end there. The stainless steel option is available on 6 of the Mill Creek models from the popular 27, suitable for up to 4 horses, and the Big Daddy, 127, for over 20 horses. Like all Mill Creek spreaders, stainless steel spreaders have the lowest sides in the industry for easy loading And that must be a problem with some manure spreaders for people your height, Jamie, is you really got to heft the basket to get them over most old manure spreaders. And the dolly wheel jack that makes moving the spreader in the barn too easy for you. Even when it's full, you can just push it around. Polyvinyl floorboards solve that other problem of the wooden floor rotting. The polyvinyl floorboards last forever, and that means that you can leave your manure in there. You don't have to empty it right away. You don't have to worry about that wood rotting out. You can't go wrong with any Mill Creek manure spreader, but the new stainless steel models are really something special. You've never seen anything like them before. Mill Creek has been in business for almost 30 years in my old hometown, and they have continuously improved their designs with horse owners in mind. When you call Mill Creek, you'll reach them at their own factory in Pennsylvania, made right here in the USA. Give them a call today at 800-311-1323 or visit their website at millcreekspreaders.com for more information. That's millcreekspreaders.com. Well, let's hear from Raquel Renner this morning, and she is singing for us, I Want to Know You.
I want to walk with you. I want to talk with you. I want to see the world through your eyes. I want to stay with you. I want to play with you. Hear the rain fall down from your sky. You think they mean? I want to feel what makes your heart beat. If you take a stand that I don't understand, it's okay if it's confusing to me. Uncomplicated. With you, I want to see the world through your eyes.
I was a horse girl by the name of Raquel Renner with a song called I Wanna Know You. You can find all of her music on iTunes. Just search for Raquel Renner. You're listening to Horses in the Morning here with Jamie Jennings and Coach Jen in the producer chair. We are here, and we're going to be back tomorrow with Kim Baker is here tomorrow for the Kim Baker Show. And then on Friday, get your really bad ads in. We didn't have really bad ads last Friday because we were off. So Jennifer has a few piling up, but she needs a few more. Send them to jennifer@horseradionetwork.com with really bad ads in the subject line and copy and paste the entire bad ad into the email so that it doesn't go away on her before she gets to it. That's on Friday's show. Really Bad Ads is back. Well, normally at this time, we have Celebrity Trivia Challenge, and this week we are not having that. It'll be back again next week. And instead, every once in a while, we'd like to talk to our listeners and our friends who are in the horse world who also have other jobs, and sometimes they are really fascinating jobs. Well, Joseph from EquityMFG.com, of course, our favorite manure forks of all times, has one of those jobs, and we wanted to talk to him about it today. Good morning, Joseph.
Good morning, Glenn, Jamie, and Jennifer. How are you?
Good. Thank
good
you for getting up so early.
Well, yeah, it's not so bad. Since I'm just getting off of fire season, I think I've been used to getting up at 5 a.m. for pretty much the whole summer.
Well, now tell us about that. How did you get into flying helicopters?
Well, I've been flying for quite a while, ever since I was young in the 70s. I wanted to fly airplanes, and at that time, the Vietnam War was ending, and there was a kind of a glut of pilots. And when I tried to get into the airlines, they said that because I had not 20/20 perfect vision, I had corrected vision, I couldn't get into the airlines. But helicopter people didn't care what you look like or anything as long as you could fly. So that's what got me into helicopters.
Now, they say flying helicopters is more difficult than planes. And I was just up in one the other day, and I was up in one with my friend who has his pilot's license. He flies small planes. And, he was saying the same thing. He said, "I know, this helicopter thing requires too much concentration." What have you found?
Well, I was listening to you on the show yesterday talking about being up in the R-44, which is a really nice helicopter and nice flying and very, very safe, relatively speaking. And the point that you're making is correct, that there's no time in a helicopter that you're just relaxing. In other words, in a small aircraft, even like a Cessna, you can let go of the controls of a trimmed aircraft and it will continue to fly nice and straight and level. They have built-in stability. Whereas a helicopter, as soon as you take your hands off of pretty much any control, it will try to turn itself inside out. So it requires a great deal of focus all the time. But that's the joy of it. That's what hooks you on flying a helicopter. And in fact, for those of you that ride horses, you can relate to some horses you can just kind of sit on with a loose rein. And then there's the other ones like Edward that, want to go sideways. And and which one would you rather ride?
Joseph, I would like to ride the one that doesn't fall directly out of the sky. That's the one I don't want to ride.
Yeah, well, as long as you're paying attention to it. But you like to be engaged with what you're riding. In other words, it's nice to have something that's really responsive and that moves off your leg and takes the bit and so on. And when you're doing that, it's a much more engaging time with something. And when you're flying a helicopter, even just flying in a simple job, it requires you to be in the moment. Then you get into more challenging environments, and helicopters are really something else to work.
Now, what do you do? Now, what do you do in the fire, when it comes to fires, what is your job?
Well, I've flown in fires now for 22 years, so I've flown everything from small helicopters doing recon to the largest air cranes flying a large tank, which carries 2,000-plus gallons of retardant or water. But I found I really liked flying the Huey helicopter, which was the helicopters that were really well known in the Vietnam War, the H models, which brought the troops into the landing zones, into the battle zones. And since then, those same helicopters, in fact, some of them are the identical same helicopters, have been refined with much bigger engines, much more powerful blades, more powerful tail rotors. And they're really the backbone of inserting firefighters in the fire line or actually into the fire itself to be able to fight the fires directly. And my job for the last couple of years has been either flying helitac, which is personnel and landing near the fires, or this year flying personnel that rappel into the fires. And so in my particular case, if there's a fire, it would be called an initial attack, where you had a lightning strike come down, light an individual tree on fire, that tree torched, the branches came down around the tree, the embers lit the surrounding area, the people see the smoke, and then they call, and they would say, hey, we have at this coordinate smoke, and can you go check it out? And so my crew and I will jump in the helicopter, fly out to the coordinate, evaluate the fire, and then I will come to a hover, and they will slide down 250-foot ropes, actually in or right near the fire, and begin suppressing the fire while it's still small. And they do an amazing job, absolutely amazing, that if you look at what they have with them to fight a fire is only what they bring with them. And anything they bring with them, they have to pack out. And
these are some pretty
that,
buff guys. These are some pretty buff guys.
Hey, we're not just talking guys. We
yeah?
have women that are out there that are 110-pound women, and they carry a 110-pound pack out.
Wow.
Now, you think about that. It's so much mental toughness, and I have so much admiration for the work that these people do. And like last year, we had one period in late July where there was over 100 strikes, fire strikes, that started over a period of about 3 or 4 days. And my crew consists of around 18 repellers, but we can bring in boosters from all over the place to help us out. And we went nonstop with putting boosters out and putting people on fires and trying to catch them while they were an acre or less, you know, before they needed to have a major suppression effort. And a lot of times they would get off of a fire after 2 or 3 days and come back to the helibase and be put out on a fire again. And but these guys live for it. I mean, they much the same as Jamie when she finishes one of her events, her eventing things. You know, I could hear her on yesterday on the radio where she still had the adrenaline and the the emotion that was wrapped up in that. And that's what happens with these young firefighters, where they come back from that thing and they're just dirty and smelly and full of poison oak and just can't wait to get on the helicopter and doing it again.
Huh.
Now I appreciate that, Glenn. Sorry, let me jump in. I appreciate the fact that you recognized my, you know, passion for it and my love for it and the adrenaline still going. And you're absolutely right. But considering me riding Edward in the same sentence as these heroes that are saving the world, I think you're stretching a little bit. I mean, seriously, you guys are heroes, and I am just riding a green horse, so I appreciate it. But, I mean, how exactly? Like,
however, you probably both break about the same amount of bones. Let me just put that in there.
Probably we break more. But it is a different breed of person who wants to fight fires. Am I right?
I
mean, it's the lifestyle is different.
I completely agree with you. One of the things that it does take a little bit of getting used to is that I think that the percentage of type A personalities is got to be pretty high. And
really,
when you get a lot of type A personalities together, it can have some interesting dynamics. And you need to sort of work with that, especially when we're not working. And that's the difficult part, is you'd like to think that every single day you're going to be out there fighting a fire, but there needs to be some kind of a source of ignition, whether it's going to be nature-caused or human-caused or whatever. And without a source of ignition, you don't have a fire. And so there can be days and days and days of these incredibly dynamic, active young people there. And that's when things get pretty interesting.
And
so
they get bored.
they get bored, and there's almost only so much physical training. They do a lot of physical training. Every single day they will go out, and they have a program of oftentimes several hours of running. And they do stuff that I would break. I mean, I literally watch what they do and say my body would not handle even that in the least. And so they're pretty fit, but they have to be for what they do.
And
so
I
how
bet.
Many times, Joseph, sorry, Glenn, how many times have you heard, hey, y'all watch this with a bunch of guys that are bored?
it's pretty funny because last year I was doing the hell attack, and it was during this time I started to watch what the young people were doing. And one of the things that they were doing was slackline. And I don't know if you know what slackline is, but it's it basically a 2-inch wide strap, like cargo strap, put between two trees. And you can put them anywhere from a foot off the ground to 4 or 5 feet off the ground. And these young people get out and they stand on the slack line and they walk back and forth and they bounce on it, stuff like that. And I thought, hey, you know, that looks kind of cool. No, it's cool for a young person. but on my 50-something-year-old muscles don't twitch fast enough to be standing on a 2-inch wide cargo strap suspended between trees.
Now, tell me, it's hard. I know one of the things about fighting fires is fires create weird wind turbulence and weird winds. Is that that's something that you guys have to deal with all the time, right, flying helicopters?
Yeah, the whole fire environment is extraordinarily challenging, and this is the interesting part about flying a helicopter is, by the time you're to the point that you're doing fires, you kind of have to be flying by muscle memory. And I know that, once again, listening to Jamie yesterday and the wonderful support that she has for her horse and understanding the time that it takes for a horse to know its job and that you have to be patient. And eventually the horse – I really liked what you were saying yesterday, where the horse recognizes it doesn't need to worry about all this stuff around it. It just needs to find the next jump. That's the same story with flying a helicopter, is you're in this incredible environment with all these other aircraft, with the fire, with the smoke, with the wind, with the air attack, with all what's going on, and you have to kind of have all of that be muscle memory and only focus on the one thing that matters. And in my case, with the repellers, it's going to be hold a stable platform so that those guys can get out of the helicopter, slide down the rope, and get on the ground as quickly as possible. And that's just part of experience, I think, where you learn, you know, what you can and can't do.
The same thing Chad has gone through over the years, and to get as good as he is now, you know, flying F-16s, you know, it's a day at work for him. But he had those years where he was developing that muscle memory. So,
yeah, and
I
talked to a lot of pilots that are younger now. I'm at the very end of the Vietnam era pilots, and it's really kind of sad because we used to call ourselves the gray hairs, where you would look around and there would be, there's not that many Huey pilots out there. I think that total there's something like 30 or so Huey helicopters in the entire Forest Service, and so that says there's about 30 pilots or maybe 40 pilots doing this particular job. And so when you'd be out there, you'd see all guys at your age, but they're all retiring. Most of the Vietnam guys are 7 or 8 years older than I am, and they're all retiring. And we're watching these young people come up, and it is really interesting talking to them and listening to what their concerns are. And they really want to understand how to be a better pilot in that environment. And I'm happy to share with them. And a lot of things I tell them, they've never heard before. You know, what Chad does with the jet is I can only imagine the focus that it takes in his particular case, because he's dealing with G-forces and speeds and everything that weren't, you know, I have nothing like that. What I have is really reduced visibility and, like you said, a lot of turbulence and of course, the helicopter has to stay right side up, too.
Good Lord. Glenn, when you talk to somebody like, you know, we're talking about Chad and then Joseph, do you feel like less smart? Because I do. Like, I sit here and talk about horses, and then these guys are, like, saving the world.
Well, yeah, it's not quite like that. I have to say this, that my wife is the consummate horse person. She is Jamie reincarnated here at Firefly Ranch, because what she knows about horses and what she's able to do, I feel the exact same way when it comes to horses and horsemanship. That I'm like yesterday, my wife went out and she says, hey, can you come look at this horse because it has a swollen leg? And so I go out there, and yeah, there's a horse with a leg that's all, it's big. And and I'm trying to look at the leg for any kind of a wound or anything like that. And you know, I'm thinking to myself, oh, you know, leg looks fine, and we'll just leave it for a day. And she says, oh, no, you can't do that. She says, that's in the hawk, and if you leave it for, you know, a day, then it's already got a fever, and because it's got a fever, it might be infected, and by tomorrow it'll be too late, and all that kind of thing. And I thought, you know, that horse would die if it was me. So we all have our own wheelhouse.
If I would be the same way, I'd be like, let's see if it goes down.
Let's see if it goes down. Yeah, this exactly.
Chad,
I'm going to put a little bit of ice on it.
Chad, too, you wouldn't even do the ice. You'd be like, yeah, he'll be all right. Just give him a week.
Yeah, it'll be fine.
Right, give it a week. So we all have our strengths. And what is interesting is that, Jamie, you recognize something in Chad that made you bond with the man, that there's something I think about pilots and the focus that we have and the ability to do our job, and we recognize it in and admire it in horsewomen, or we wouldn't, you know, be married to the people we are and support them the way that we do. And there's some kind of a sympathetic relationship between people that fly airplanes and people that ride horses. And I'm lucky enough to get to straddle both.
Literally.
Oh, literally, yeah, yeah. And they are similar in the way that if you consider a cyclic and eclectic is your aids, you do need to have tremendous feel and tremendous touch out of your aids, whether it's a helicopter or a horse. But a horse, of course, can dump you off.
Okay, so. When you said you straddle both, I thought you were talking about you get to straddle the helicopter and you get to straddle the horse girl.
Oh,
so.
Well, now that's especially good.
That's what I was talking about. That's where I thought it was going.
Oh, you must straddle the horse. Gotcha. That makes more sense. Sorry.
But,
no, I obviously was thinking horse girl, too. So I was with you.
We do. It is interesting that my horse Conquest is an Andalusian stallion, an Iberian horse, and Iberians and Arabians are, you know, they're the foundation breeds, and they have a special relationship with humans that goes back centuries. And I do find it interesting that during the summertime, when I come back from flying the helicopter, my adrenaline level is not rational. Right, you're on the edge of your seat. You can't really settle down, and that level of intensity just is there whether you like it or not every day. I work 12 on and 2 off, but I'm off in place, meaning I'm working every day 14 hours a day. But anyways, when I do come home and I go to greet my horse, he runs up to the gate because we have a wonderful relationship, and then he smells like my hand as it's coming towards him, and I swear to God it must have lightning bolts coming out of my hand. Because his eyes will get big and his ears will go up, and then he's off. He's gone. He doesn't want anything to do with the personality of the person that flies that helicopter. We're so not in the same place as the wonderful symbiotic relationship you have to be a good horse person. And the funny thing is that when I come home, my wife also runs too. Because she doesn't like the pilot personality either. And I don't know if Chad is able to turn his on or off at will, but I'm not able to do it.
No, I think it's an ingrained thing. You're born with it for sure. I think it's a personality thing that leads you to do the job you do anyway.
Yeah, and I'm fortunate that I do this for 6 months and the fire season is over. And then I'm pretty much able to put it away. I don't think about it. I ride my horse. I do the thing with the Ride in Portugal website and enjoy horsemanship. And then I pick flying back up in the summertime. But Chad lives it, you know, all year round, and maybe he is able to find a way to have it more in perspective. But I'm not able to do that.
I would like his perspective to be Andalusians. So how do I make that happen?
Well, my wife, she was a pretty clever person, because when I married her, I was aware of horses, but I was in no way a horseman. And if Chad wants to take you for an airplane ride, he just says, hey, come on, honey, let's go for a plane ride. When I met my wife, she would say, hey, I've got a horse sitting out there all brushed and all saddled, and you don't need to do any work. Just come on out. I just want to have your company, and let's go for a ride together. And I had so much fun sitting on a horse. And that's how it all started with me. Is as I said to Diane, when I want you to come for a helicopter ride, I don't make you polish the helicopter and put gas in it or do any maintenance. I just say,
Hey, Joseph, wait a minute.
It.
Jennifer, are you listening? Because I have to brush my own pony and I have to put the harness on and get the car. Are you listening to that, Jennifer? Thanks.
Yeah, I
get it, Joseph, and he's got his own horse now and everything like that. No, I would like to get him the Andalusian gene so that he wants to fill the farm with Andalusians.
He wants to buy you Andalusians.
Well,
the
way that worked was that I bought my wife an Andalusian, and then she gave it back to me. That's the way that worked, yeah. And once you start to ride an Andalusian horse or get involved with them, you find it's a little bit sort of kind of difficult to find Iberian-specific training. You know, they from the Iberian Peninsula, they have kind of a different cultural background than, say, an Arab, you know, a flight-based horse. And in order to kind of get used to that, I did the same thing as you as I went over to Spain. But then I got way too involved with it and started a website and everything involving learning classical riding. And so I got totally immersed in it. And that was completely unpredicted by my wife. She thought, well, you know, I'll give him this horse and he'll have fun with it. But like most guys, you know, we can get really head over something or other. And I did. And still am far more involved with the Iberian horse than what my wife could have ever expected. But what a great relationship.
That you took all her horse money. See, that's what it comes down to, Joseph, is you took all her horse money.
Well, I'm privileged because my wife to this day, at nighttime, I'll be really tired because I do all the stuff around the ranch that's not only horse-related. And she'll go out at 9 o'clock and check on the horses and put them to bed and all that kind of thing, and I don't have to. So the beauty of it is I get most of the good stuff, and I don't have to deal with the bad stuff. And, of course, you've seen the result when I have to start cleaning horse manure, right?
That's right. Hey, speaking of which, before we run out of time here, equitymfg.com, the Flex and Fork and the Shake and Fork, and we are, believe it or not, only, 2 months away. We're just about 2 months away from Christmas, which means it's time to really start thinking about the ultimate Christmas gift, and I can't think of anything better. We gave, as a matter of fact, a bunch of the hosts here, we gave our landlord a Flex and Fork for Christmas last year, and we said it in the commercials last year, but it is true. We've seen it happen this year. Is he uses that every day. So if you want to give a gift that really, truly does keep on giving every day of the year and many years after that, you've got to take a look at the Equity Forks. But now is the time, right? You really got to be thinking about getting your orders in now.
Yeah, it's because of the Horse Radio Network, our business, I use the term, it keeps picking up, and it's not just, you know, in relationship.
I like that.
Yeah, but it is. Horse Radio Network and the listeners and the word of mouth that has happened has been so helpful to us, and as the Christmas season comes along, there's an awful lot of people that put off a purchase. These aren't cheap. With shipping and everything, it costs you around $75 for a Flex and Fork, which is a fairly large sum of money, but they last a tremendously long time. Anyways, that's something that people talk about and say, honey, this is something I'd really like, and you can get it for me for Christmas, a nice, useful gift. If you want to go really crazy, get a carbon fiber handle put on them, which is
awesome.
It doubles the cost, but that's something that's worth every penny, and you'll never wear the handle pull out. Even if you wear the basket out, you just, you know, buy a new handle pull. And then if the person has stables or stalls with shavings or pellets, and you want to make their life a lot easier, then you buy the Shake and Fork. Like you say, if you've got three or more horses, you're going to save so much of that person's time. And more importantly, it's the wear and tear on somebody's body, because the population of horse owners, we're like aging collectively. And I've heard so many stories from especially women that are 50 or older, and they're actually considering getting out of owning horses because the day-to-day effort to shake the manure from the shavings is so great, and their joints hurt or their hips hurt or their elbows hurt, and they get the shake and fork, and they say, you've literally saved my career, my passion for horses, because of how easy it is to clean a stall now. And they don't have to shake anymore. So, you know, for husbands that are looking for something special, for wives that are looking for something for themselves, or if they get a shake and fork, you know, us guys, we love our tools. Maybe he'll be out there helping you out like I eventually wound up doing.
They're
a great gift.
I got to tell you, I was at the horse trial this past weekend, and, you know, when you're in those stalls and that stabling with all those strangers basically next to each other, and I start using the shaking fork, and you hit that button, and it's like, grrr,
right.
People always come up to me like, what is that? And there was a husband who was like, I want one of these for Christmas. He's like, I'd rather pick it up with my hand than shake it. And he's like, I need one of these. And so I think you may get a couple more purchases around Christmas time because of being at that horse show. It just attracts a crowd.
I can't figure out why, when we have such a tremendous following and so many people love the Flex and Fork and Shake and Fork, how is it that you can go to horse shows and people have never seen it? And, you know, we've been involved with you for 2 or 3 years, and these have been out.
Yeah, well, Joseph, we were at the World Percheron Congress, Wendy and I, and there's a lot of people there that have never heard of the Horse Radio Network, and that always blows my mind, too, because we have like 130,000 listeners, but that just shows you how many people there are in the horse world.
Yeah, and you've got 10,000 likes, and when I last looked at our web, I think we had 98. So we got a long ways to go on Facebook. We need more.
That's only because of, we'll credit Jennifer with that. She posts a lot of good stuff that gets a lot of attention. I think that's part of it there. But Joseph, before we are running out of time here, I have to say one thing. You're going to have to take into consideration a new bedding that we talked about earlier in the show. They're experimenting with using hemp now as bedding. So,
oh, love it.
You'll need to figure out which fork. And can you imagine how cool the shaking fork would be if you're sifting hemp bedding? Woo, that's a trip.
I'm right liking that entire idea. Yeah, they got to figure out something to do with all the trimmings or something.
Oh, my God. Joseph, you're going to have to invent the hemp basket for your flexing fork. The hemp basket.
Oh, I could just see trying to write that up on the taxes.
Ooh,
is that I have to be buying
it
all the...
So that, can you make it so that the basket has a little electrical thing in it that heats up just a little bit?
Just a tiny bit.
Not enough to catch it on fire, but just enough to get some smoke off of it.
Little incense,
that'd be perfect.
Right?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah,
yeah,
smell like patchouli oil in your barn there.
Thank you, Joseph. EquityMFG.com. Fascinating stuff.
Oh, thank you. I love your show, and I can't wait to talk with you again.
All right.
Thanks for being a sponsor, as always.
All right, thanks. Bye-bye.
The guy's
that guy's
a genius. I mean, his brain has to be so busy all the time with the flying and the horses and the inventing things. And, I mean, just he's such an impressive dude.
You know, if he was allowed to, it'd be fun to talk to Chad sometime, but I don't know that he's allowed to talk about his job.
Oh, yeah, he'll tell you anything you want to know. You kidding? Until you ask him something that he's not allowed to say, and you go, I can't tell you that. I'm like, come on, Area 51, dude. You got to have some insight on Area 51. I'm your wife. I won't tell anybody.
Oh, I'm sure
anybody.
He's flown over it. You know he's flown
It'll
over
be a secret, and he's like, can't tell you anything. So there's something to be said about Area 51. He just ain't going to tell me what it is.
It's fascinating to find out for me, though, what's his day? You know, what's his day consist of? That'd be fascinating, too. We'll have to get him on sometime and chat
with
him.
Well, come visit us, and I'll take you out to the flight line. That's all you have to do. Come visit.
That'd be fun, too. Maybe this winter sometime we can get out to Arizona and say hi.
Yeah.
I got to go to Tombstone. You know, I got to do what your dad did, so I got to go to Tombstone. And I've never been to the Grand Canyon. Well, I was there once. Jennifer's never been to the Grand Canyon, so we got to do that, too. Got lots of things to do when we come visit.
Plenty of things to do here in Arizona in the wintertime. Don't come in the summer. It's god-awful.
Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us. I know we didn't talk a whole lot about horses today, but, you know, every once in a while, we got to take a little break, too. And
we learned
we
about inflammation, Glenn. You missed that. You were so tuned out for the entire middle of the show. You don't realize we actually talked about horses for like 25 minutes in the middle. You weren't even there.
Yeah. I don't know where I was during that time.
Okay, can I just point out that Robin Donaghy, our listener, is repeatedly sending me Craigslist ads for Andalusians? I have two already.
Trying
I need
to help
go
you
to
out
Dallas.
There.
I need to go to Dallas. Dude. Thanks,
well,
Robin.
We will be back tomorrow. As I said, it is the Kim Baker Show tomorrow. And Uta, our listener, is getting a reading on one of her horses tomorrow. So Uta will be here tomorrow to do a reading. And then Kim will be talking horsemanship and all things horse as the day goes on. And then Friday, Jamie will be back and really bad ads. So we'll be back on Friday. So tune in the rest of the week. We're happy to have you. And thank you so much for joining us this morning. We appreciate it. That's it for today. Say goodbye, Jamie.
Bye, Tudor Tell. Bye, Glenn. Jennifer, feel better, honey. Take a nap. Make your husband wait on you hand and foot.
Blade driver. I cook. Bring her drinks.